for the snow today. For the snow.
Absolutely. And it was a brisk I think low 60s, high 50s today here. Yesterday was miserable though, just because it was cold and rainy, you know, but no foot of snow. So
okay.
I feel like I'm winning as long as I can say no foot of snow.
Yeah, that equals win.
That equals win. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Zebra Stripes Podcast. What episode is this with?
I believe we're on Lucky 7.
Lucky 7 of Season 2? Season 2, Episode 7. I'm rolling with it. Sounds right. I mean, I have no clue. That's why I kicked it to you. Great to be back. I am Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LeJour. Coach Whit, how's everything up in your neck of the woods outside of that, you know, foot of snow?
Well, outside of the foot of snow, I think we're in full January mode. So, you know, season in full swing here. League schedules everywhere. Topsy-turvy world of prep basketball, maybe college basketball, all the above. But, you know, all good up here in Maine.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's that time of the year in all basketball, right? Well, in all high school basketball, for sure. You're starting to get closer to whatever the tournament format is for that area. You know, all of the games are meaningful games now. For the most part, everybody's in district or region or conference play, whatever they call it, whatever they distinguish it. I think it's always interesting to take a look at teams and how they look now compared to the way they looked at the beginning of the season. You know, are people trending up? Are people trending down? Do you see the continuity coming together, or do you see things starting to fracture because maybe things aren't going the way they want them to, you know, you want them to go? For you, this time of year, what's your mindset as you start to work into your postseason play?
Mindset generally would be, you know, we really are just beginning to learn about our team. You know, say after the holidays or into the second semester. So we're the first semester you're learning, because obviously everyone's new. So you're figuring your team out a little bit, hopefully. That's part of the mindset. They're starting to, you know, get a better sense. And then the other is, you know, and I just said it to you, we've lost some this year. Now we had a good weekend with some good wins. The other is, you know, you're trying to get better, obviously, like everyone. And I've always said, at least in the prep thing, at this time of year, you got to get better at least two more times, you know, because we're on vacation like Division III a little bit, and unlike high school. So we get some time off that's significant. Some coaches say it's starting over. So, you know, once you're back in shape and you got your game legs back and all that good stuff, you got to get better, and you can't confuse just getting back at it with getting better, because getting back at it's just getting in shape. You know, kind of get to where you were, then you get better, and I think you got to do it another time, you know. So good teams are going to get better two more times and then make a run at the whatever, you know, say the conference or championships or something like that. So the mindset is build, you know, and see what you got.
What's the hardest part of that for a team in your estimation? Is it the getting back? Is it the getting better?
You know what? Both pose a problem. I would say the bigger problem is the getting better, right? Because you're going to get back. And so then the question is, what do you do with what you've learned about each other and what you've been doing say up to the semester break, you know, do you have the mental toughness and fortitude to push and be better? You know, talent is a factor in some of that too, because winning and losing can influence that. Confidence comes into play. I mean, all sorts of things. So I think you got to have a stomach, you know, to be competitive enough, win, lose, or draw, to you know, we say, you know, to keep two hands on the rope, so to speak, right? You got to keep pulling and can't let go of the rope. I mean, so whatever analogy you want to use, I think the harder part is actually getting better, and not being satisfied. Roles change. I think that's another subtle thing that happens at higher levels too. It happens here for sure. You know, roles can change. Teams evolve. They don't stay the same, all stuff, you know. So it's kind of having some fun with that too. That those are opportunities that sometimes guys don't, may not even know they have in front of them, that they keep, you know, grinding. They do. We had a lineup on the floor in this last weekend at one point, five guys off the bench who gave us a lot of pop, you know, and it was a pretty good lineup. And you know what, that bodes well for us if we can continue to do that a little bit more.
Absolutely. It's interesting because, like, the high school, in the high school or the prep level, you're getting to the postseason run. In college, I mean, I guess you could say they're getting to the postseason run, but there's still another, it still feels like there's a whole other month that you've got to navigate games. And things can swing so wildly because you have the end of the regular season, then you have your conference postseason, then you have whatever national tournament you're in, right? And so you can see a team make three different, like, wholesale changes in kind of who they are in that time, just based off of how they fare down the stretch of each, you know, going into each area. This year seems to be pretty similar to what we talked about last year, when it came to college basketball. There seems to be a lot of teams that are good, but no great team, no outlier. So I'm going to make a bold declaration. I don't care how good you play offense. If you can't D people up, you've got zero chance of winning the national championship this year. It's just way too many good defensive teams out there that could at any point in time give you an 8-minute, 7-minute scoreless streak that you're going to have to be able to respond in kind, or else you probably have no chance of making a run through the playoffs. And I mean, excuse me, through a tournament and ending up in a Final Four to have a chance to win it. And even then, there's most likely going to be a defensive team in the semifinals and in the final game that you're going to have to go through.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think if ultimately you're going to win, you need to play on both ends. But similar to the NBA, right? You know, and again, different games. I do think the defense ratchets up a whole new level when you get to that point. You know, and so the best teams are going to be playing defense, but at the end, you know, you also, in this day and age, you know, you got to be able to score the ball somehow, some way. So it can be a Kemba Walker show, right? It can kind of, you can ride a great guard, or you can ride a Carmelo Anthony, maybe, or whoever we want to talk about, or it can be more team based. But you got to score the ball too.
Yeah, no, I you know me, I definitely think you got to score the ball. I don't think the team that wins it is going to be a team that doesn't put it in the cup. I just don't see these teams that routinely throw up, you know, 75, 80 points a game, having a chance to do that down through like a playoff run, because you're just going to get one meat grinder after another. And that jumper comes a little bit softer, you know, after you've had to work so hard to get it off two or three or four times. But with that, do you believe there's a Kemba Walker, Carmelo Anthony type guy out there? Cause I don't know if there is. Like, I don't know if there's a guy that could just be like, hey, get on my back. Let's go.
Yeah.
Or is that the magic of the tournament that somebody might just appear? Outside of Carmelo Anthony, obviously.
Right. I mean, it's definitely the magic of the tournament where maybe, you know, college hoop insiders had a sneaking suspicion, but the rest of us really didn't see it coming. So I do think guys, right? I guess individuals, just like teams, do get hot, and that's enough, right? It's not a series like the NBA. So now that guy or that team can get on a run, right? That's all you got to do, and take them to places that no one saw coming, right? In the NBA, obviously, you got to win a series, and so that becomes a whole different proposition for individuals and teams. I know Alabama, who's currently rated one in some polls with the drop. I'm a Nate Oates guy, but I wasn't trying to prop that.
In Nate Oates, you trust. I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad.
You know, shameless plug again for me on Alabama. Unlike you and Gonzaga, I'm not totally out, but I'm not totally in because of the balance. But they have a great freshman, and I can't remember his name because I didn't study to get ready for this thing tonight, but they have a freshman that I've seen that is a pro, and he's really good. So he's someone that might fit the bill of star quality guy that can carry them.
Boy,
and hey, by the way, whoa, Purdue number two or one, depending on the polls you read, it's got Zach Edey, you know, the monster big, who typically, right, is not going to be able to take a team.
That's my issue with Purdue. Purdue would have to do something that we rarely see done. They would have to be led by a big man to a national championship. When's the last time a big man was the impetus for a national championship?
That's a very fair question.
Like a legitimate big man. I'm not talking about like a Chris Webber, you know, or, you know, a guy that's uber, you know, more of like a four that's got some outside wiggle, and I mean a back to the basket, get his buckets down low type of big that leads a team to a championship.
Yeah, an old school big. That's a great question. That
does Tyler Hansbrough, Does he qualify because he was a back to the basket guy, even though he's not a traditional big?
I think he could swing. He could qualify in some states, but he might not qualify in other states.
That's fair.
He's close to qualifying, but I don't know if we can.
I don't want to qualify him, just for the record. I don't want to qualify him because I don't look at him as a
big.
It's just strange because it's like Anthony Davis, right? Like, but he wasn't like a.
Well, he's pretty close.
He was as close as you can, you know.
Yeah, he's pretty close. You know, Chet. We could have said last year at Gonzaga, but it's the same thing as Anthony. I mean, he's not what we're really talking about.
Chet's definitely more of a perimeter dude.
He's a newfangled
dude. Anthony Davis was.
Right.
And he didn't get it done, which is why I'm out on Gonzaga, and I will always be out on Gonzaga. I look prophetic this year too, by the way. They don't look remotely impressive.
Right.
Well, not even in the West Coast Conference.
Right.
Like,
well,
and they've got a 38-year-old man on the team. Like, they've got a dude who's been playing as long as LeBron's playing right there on the team. And it's why guards matter. In guards, I trust when it comes to the tourney.
And you should. I completely agree with you.
In guards, I trust.
And a lot of people trust Tom Izzo. So depending on.
Oh no! Yeah, that's my second mantra. In Izzo, we trust.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think they have enough horses to make a run. They've kept some games closer than I thought they would be able to keep. They've won some games that I didn't think they were going to win, but then they've been summarily handled by some teams like their last game versus Illinois. Illinois really put it on them. It was just you could tell that there was a talent gap between those two teams, and rarely do you get the opportunity to say that with an Izzo team. Why do you think we don't see the dominant? Like, is it just as simple as, well, you know, the NBA? Because I feel like the NBA's been taking players forever. This isn't something new. Like, people have been leaving early or too early for the NBA forever. So why haven't we seen more of the dominant teams in college basketball over the last, what, probably 4 to 5 years, I would say?
Yeah. That's a great question. I think part of the answer stems from the idea that, better players on some of the teams are going to the league. So I think that's part of the answer, right? I think part of the answer is the high majors lose guys and the low major, mid or not low, but mid-major programs get older. And so that shrinks the gap of talent. And then the last thing I do think it's just, boy, everyone has grown up playing so much AAU basketball together at the highest levels that they're still, we forget sometimes they're 18 to 24 years old or whatever they are. And, they're going to be prone to inconsistency, and then that kind of gets exposed when they get to the league. Cause like, if you're going to make that now, you gotta be a grown ass man. I mean, you gotta have something special. So I just think the teams are a little more vulnerable, maybe for a few reasons. I don't know if that's a great explanation, but I think it's a good question. I think it's hard. Everyone's recruiting so hard. I mean, you don't have, it's hard for any team in one of the Power Five conferences to dominate because the recruiting is so,
Do you think that part of it might have to do with, because now there's so much freedom of movement, you don't see teams having the ability to gel the same way that they used to?
Yeah, I think that's recent. I mean, I think that's more, absolutely in recent years. I think that's some of it. But I think that's a relatively new phenomenon, and I almost, I don't know. It'd be a great question.
21 and 22 and now 23. So that's the last 3 years we've been in the
right.
Move how you want to move for a season type of business. I don't know. I just, it's really interesting to me. Like,
I'll tell you another one too. I'll give you another theory. I mean, I this is just right off the top of my head, but going back to that Adidas scandal and some of the coaches and programs that were, really put under the microscope. I mean, we might be in a period of time where administration said, hey, we got to cool our jets, like from the top right on down. I don't know how that might all play out, but the idea that it was going to get a little tougher, if you will, to assemble the greatest number of players in any one place because they just maybe had to temporarily change the way they were doing business. And obviously this NIL as a whole is a separate issue, but maybe related.
Yeah. I like I said,
when scandals hit sport, either football or you know, basketball typically, because the revenue producing sports, you know, thing, it shakes things up for a while. So I'm not, you know, there's nothing major here, but I don't think it's, you know, Kansas probably has to be a little, maybe a little more careful or whatever. A lot of people do. When USC, back with the Reggie Bush thing, you know, and all of that programs, it just seems like when something hits, even if it's not the death penalty, you know, they watch it for a while, you know. And so my case here is just saying, okay, college basketball, you know, and college football is undergoing so much scrutiny and change. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's having some type of leveling out effect on basketball. But for the last couple of years, definitely what you're saying is accurate, which is the freedom of movement. I don't know.
I think the interesting part for me is that you see these teams bringing in these, oh, well, this is a top 10 recruiting class, a top 5 recruiting class. And that used to essentially mean, like, pencil them in for a one seed. You know, right. Like those top recruiting classes used to pay dividend immediately. And now you're seeing Kentucky get all of these guys in and they still look bad. Like, you're seeing LSU bring in this monster class, they still look bad. You know, or not bad, but just not to the level of what we've been used to seeing when you say, hey, they brought in a top, you know, a top 6 class, a top 5 class, top 4 class. And then I think that the movement part comes into play, because if that 5-star or that 4-star that went to Kentucky doesn't strike gold immediately, he might leave and go to another school instead of coming back for the second year, where you get the double up, where, hey, we've got a top 5 class this year. We lost one guy from that top 5 class that went to the league, but the other 4 guys came back, and now we double that up with another top 5, top 10 recruiting class. And now we've got these nucleus guys who've been in the program 1 year. They know how it works. They're that much more hungry because they didn't leave after 1 year. And we've got a whole new batch of dudes coming in that are going to push them because they believe they're better than those guys that are out there right now. And now everything is hella competitive. Everything is hella up. And I'm able to run out this depth. This 8-9 guys that can just put it on you on a regular basis. I've been surprised that that's not what we've seen happen more often than not. I thought that would be the situation in Baylor. It is not the situation in Baylor. They have definitely regressed from what they had when they were there. But everything that I look at says they should be better based off of the talent they're supposed to have. But they're wildly inconsistent, like wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, and I have a hard enough time trying to understand, and I don't mean this negative way. I'm trying to figure out the every year the guys I've got and the 18-year-olds and everything they're going through, and so the guys that these colleges are dealing with in some cases are no older, and then only a few years older. So, you know, you hear coaches talking about it. You know, the makeup of kids and some of the factors you're talking about, what they're, you know, the options they have, and coaches have a little less leverage, and maybe you can't coach kids quite as hard. And I think there's a series of factors there on both sides of it that interesting. But, you know,
it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Right.
Yeah. And I think what's going to play out, you know, is exactly what you said earlier. Like a team is, and it's a little bit of what I was saying too, but a team's going to emerge, you know, in that college, because there's a long, long way to go. Some individuals are going to emerge that we're maybe less aware of. And, you know, it's going to kind of make sense in retrospect. So, and I think our position is somewhere in between that. We're not a high school. We're not even close ourselves to the district or a playoff. Like, our season is much longer and much more similar to a college deal. I mean, shit, we go a little longer than Division III college, for God's sake. Our season's a little longer than that. So, it's somewhere in the middle. And Coach K said every season is a lifetime, and I would say that within every season there can be several lifetimes, which is kind of what you were alluding to. So, it's gonna be an interesting year, and that's why everybody likes March Madness. And fasten your seatbelt a little bit. I'm gonna say a little bit like the NFL playoffs.
Well, definitely a little bit like the NFL playoffs. And I was actually talking about this earlier, the similarities with the NFL playoffs and what makes it so good, like the NCAA tournament. You're one and done.
Right.
You're one and done, and you don't have the luxury of having a bad game. So for guys like Dak Prescott and guys like Josh Allen, like, we don't really want to hear the excuses. Like, the excuses don't matter at this point. If you're out there and you're playing, then that's what it is. Your next week, when Patrick Mahomes takes on the Bengals again, and the Bengals have beat the Chiefs three straight times, and Patrick Mahomes is not going to be 100%. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear, oh, Patrick Mahomes, he's out there and he's gutting it out, and his ankle is in high ankle sprain. Nobody cares. At the end of the day, it is your job to survive and advance. And the team that's able to do that, the team that's able to make that happen, to continue to put themselves in position to be there at the end, those are the teams that are going to, have a chance to win the Super Bowl. I think it's interesting though, like the situation in the situation in Buffalo is not getting enough attention like the situation in Dallas is. And I know people will say, well, it's Dallas and America's team and all this other ridiculousness, but people are roasting. They've already decided that Dak Prescott is not a franchise quarterback. Had a down season, threw a lot of interceptions, then ended the season on a bad note. Josh Allen led the league in interceptions. He led the league in turnovers. He finished on an even worse note than Dak Prescott has. And yet he has skated on a lot of the blame, that everything is, oh, well, now he needs more help. Now he, now he, or the coaching, he lost his offensive coordinator. Well, it's the same offense. He didn't lose everybody. He lost the offensive coordinator. He didn't lose like the quarterback's coach. He's still there. And so it's like when you hear these things, I just go back to excuses be damned. This is the playoffs.
Yeah, you know what my take is there? I think I don't think Josh Allen's getting a free pass, nor are the Buffalo Bills everywhere. Maybe in the national media a little bit, but I've heard people saying, "Hey, is their run, the Bills window that's closing?" And some of that is, "Hey, Josh, like, whoa, this didn't happen again." I think the Buffalo fans are a little jittery, obviously, because of what happened in the Jim Kelly years. Like, just bridesmaid. So hope was reigning so supreme that this year again crushed them. I think that's there are just a couple of years. I think Dallas, similarly, right, has been waiting for the opportunity to get back to what, their expectation is. And it seemed like maybe this year they had a chance to do that. So they've been failing for longer, is my argument. So thus, and Dak is then eating that a little bit as the quarterback in the face of the franchise. It was going to be a hell of a story had they won. See, the whole narrative would be entirely different had they won. And let's face it, they're playing a great freaking team. And football's the ultimate team sport. So, yeah, Brock Purdy, you know what? If you have a great team with players on both sides of the ball, then you can have an inexperienced quarterback because football is a team game. So yeah. that's my difference, that Buffalo is just on has a little bit more leash but now you give them another year or two, it'll be the same damn thing.
Yeah, I just but my thought process is, in Buffalo, they ignore the truth. Right? The truth is when they decided to tank their season to try to draft another quarterback because they felt like they needed to get better than Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor took a team purposely trying to tank to the playoffs. They then dismantled that situation to bring in Josh Allen and reload, retool, all that stuff.
Yep.
And now, after you have wasted the rookie contract years, because that's important, and now this $250 million contract is about to take hold, you've got to figure out, now you're saying you need to plug holes? Now you need that? You need to upgrade the offensive line? You need more receiving weapons? You've got a bona fide number one wide receiver. You've got a bona fide deep threat. You've got a tight end that can catch. You've got two running backs. You've got one that's a scat back slot guy that can, like, what else do you need a guy to do? You need a guy to not turn the ball over. And that's where we go back to Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy knows, hey, listen, I'm just trying not to screw up the cha-cha, as Herm Edwards would say. I'm trying not to screw the cha-cha up, you know? And so was Brock Purdy good yesterday? No, he wasn't good, but he didn't make the critical, oh my God, mistakes that Dak Prescott did. And for a guy who's a rookie to not make that mistake, versus a guy who's been in the league as long as Dak. That's the unforgivable part. Like, I'm not trying to give Dak a pass on this at all. I'm just wondering why we haven't seen as much vitriol for people blaming Josh Allen. Like, I've heard what you've heard. Like, I've heard that, hey, their run might be over.
Right.
I haven't heard a whole lot, hey, Josh Allen, you screwed the pooch. Like, this was your year. You were supposed to be the MVP. You were the odds-on MVP from everybody going into the season. You were the Bills were picked to go to the Super Bowl by everybody that mattered. Everyone with a national voice. And this is the results. This is the
result. That's, you know, I think so many people were, you know, stocking their wallets with fantasy credit earned from Josh Allen. They, you know, probably giving him a little bit of a pass, but now that they drank all the beer, right, and felt really good, the hangover hits. And so maybe in the coming day or so, yeah, they might feel how you're saying they probably should feel about it. I think that, you know, that might be true. Anyway, yeah,
I just think, hey, we'll see Brock, what happens on the back end.
Yeah, Brock Purdy, you know, did his best impersonation of, you know, a young Tom Brady. I mean, that's all we're talking about, right? Who, you know, as a young quarterback before he became the GOAT, you know, was just the, you know, capable, trusted, possession oriented, you know, don't go out and lose the game quarterback. And that's, boy, you know, but that's not the way, you know, the game's changed a little bit, right? It's like basketball. It's more of a high flying, high risk game played by most coaches. You know, that struck me actually in the playoffs that, you know, by the end of the day, whether not just the snow, these games have a tendency to go from, you know, Something
wide
just like
open to.
just what you're talking about in the NCAA tournament, man. You better have a defense. You better have a ball control offense because those possess, 13 plays, 7 minutes, boom, boom, boom. It's played one way.
You looked up, and Dallas was doing a great job of holding San Francisco, and that everybody running crosses. San Francisco
Right.
said, "Oh, word, let's hit you." Gap scheme, gap scheme, gap scheme, gap scheme, gap scheme, and it was just like 3, 5, 7, 8, 4, 9, like, and just gutted them all the way down the field, and then came back on the next possession and did the exact same thing, and all of a sudden we looked up. And there was 4 minutes left in the game.
Right.
Like, at some point, Shanahan looked around and went, "All right, let's stop throwing. Let's." I think it was after Brock Purdy got lucky with the pass that ricocheted off the fingers of Kittle.
Yeah.
He was able to bring it in, and they was like, "All
yeah.
right, we're playing with fire. Let's turn around and hand this thing off to all of these athletes that we've got back here playing running back and this like massive offensive line." With these dudes, and they just pounded the Cowboys out.
Yeah, so it's almost to me, to my perspective is, because obviously all at the highest level, it's all entertainment. I mean, at the end of the day, so it's entertainment until we get to, the divisional round, and now it's okay. It's winning time. Now we're getting down to football. Now the entertainment's over. Now we go out and win.
Yeah, there's the business of entertainment in the regular season.
Right.
And then there's the business of winning.
Correct.
Right? You almost, if you can walk a line between both, like Kansas City's able to do, that's great. But if you can't, you better have a defense and a run game when things get a little bit when things get a little bit murky. And I think that's one of the things that came back to hurt Buffalo is that they have a team that exists in an area where the weather is going to be trash every single like postseason.
Yeah.
And yet you don't have a team built to operate in that weather.
Yeah.
Doesn't really make much sense to me. That's a flaw. That's a flaw in your design. And it'll be, like I said, it'll be fun to see what they do in the offseason to address that. Because I think some people are going to get blamed that shouldn't get blamed via we got to bring some dudes in. And they may not address the actual issue at all, which is for some reason this offense doesn't want to run the ball, even though they have guys who can run the ball.
What are the – yeah, and I'm not sure they do, right? I don't know Buffalo enough. They just don't because, anyway. What are the feel-good stories of the playoffs? Obviously, Jacksonville was a feel-good story. The Giants, as far as they went, were a feel-good story.
Was the Giants a feel-good story? And I know I write for the Giants, and so Giants people, forgive me.
Yeah.
Were they a feel-good story or were they a lucky story?
I mean, I think they were a feel good story because I think I'm a guy who believes in karma, so I don't think you do everything that they did on sheer luck. I think that was a team that, did what surprise teams have to do to make the run and ultimately, when I didn't put a great showing on. But exceeded everyone's expectations too. So I like that as a feel good story. And obviously Jacksonville for sure was. And am I missing someone? Who am I missing? Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call the Chargers getting to
right
the playoff like a feel good story because they underachieved again. They should have been better.
Yep.
And then they got there and then didn't get the job done.
And there's
Bengals making another run.
I think that's Cincinnati. I just think because I've got them picked to win it, which way, but I don't know if I did it on this show, but I did do it. And after I did it, everyone was the Bengals, really? So now I'm like, oh yeah, I picked the Bengals. I really don't even know why, except I'm a huge Joe Burrow believer. And then, the Bengals are pretty freaking good anyway. But I think it's that market. I just think the Bengals go under the radar. So they're not, if they were the Chicago Bengals, it would be a different narrative on them. If they were the New England Bengals, it would be a different narrative. If they were the LA Bengals, it would be a different narrative. But they're Cincinnati. So when they, that's going to be a feel-good story when they win.
Yeah, I think here's the problem, right, for Cincinnati. And this is how I think the playoffs are gonna like
I love
work
it.
out.
Some early prognostication.
The AFC just does not play good enough defense. The teams that are there, they don't play good enough defense to beat these teams from the NFC. In my mind, the championship game is San Francisco Philly, because I don't have faith that Kansas City and or Cincinnati can score enough against their defenses and keep them from bludgeoning them with the run. I don't think either one of those teams are built to do it. And you don't have to look any further than the wild card round for Cincinnati to understand why. They were playing with a backup quarterback whom everybody has said shouldn't even be like in the league. They were playing with a backup coordinator in Ball, I mean a backup quarterback in Baltimore. Their offensive coordinator was on the hot seat to be fired. They come out with a team that they've already seen twice this year, and that team takes them to the brink. They're not even on the level of Philadelphia or 49ers being able to pound you out, and or what their quarterback is able to do within the scheme of a game. It's not a good matchup. Now, Cincinnati gets the nod because Kansas City, we don't know what Mahomes is going to be, right? If Mahomes is a statue, is he as effective? That's the question, right? If he can't move, if he can't buy time, are those receivers good enough to win without Mahomes buying them an extra second or two? That's the question. I say, I don't know. You gotta lean Bengals. But when the Bengals get to, when they get to the Super Bowl, it's Rams all over again. Like, it's Rams all over again. Like, how does your offense match up versus those defenses? Because they don't match up, they didn't match up very well against Baltimore's defense, and Baltimore has probably the best defense in the AFC.
Right, but I just take a, I don't take that game as gospel, because you're talking about divisional opponents. So I don't, I think there's, you got to take that matchup, with a grain of salt, and I think you got to take the game itself with, as a anomaly, sort of a, just not a true indication. And then I think, while the edge, I agree, would go to Philly, because that would be, I have to believe the experts are picking Philly right now.
I am.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone, that I had Cincy, but my brain would certainly say Philly. I think, like we've seen in some Super Bowls, but not all, like when the Patriots famously, had the undefeated streak going, football and addition to being the ultimate team game is also, one of the ultimate emotional games, right? Because of the absolute brutal physicality of the sport. So we've seen funny things happen just the same way we did in the college football playoffs, where on any given day, for reasons unforetold to all of us, one team comes out with a energy, purpose, physicality that just is beyond them. And maybe the other team line, you know, is superior in, by position on paper. Well, the game's not played on paper. So I think that's where, you know, sure, you can post a line and say, well, here are the favorites, but that's why the games just don't always go that way, and they don't always go that way in the Super Bowl either. So
yeah, no, I'm looking at it, and I don't like the I think the narrative for Joe Burrow, because I like Joe Burrow a lot too. I think the narrative for Joe Burrow and the Bengals is a great narrative. Like,
right,
got
right.
Close, made the necessary improvements, got yep. that. But almost similarly to last year, had a lot of things fall their way along the road. Where does the magic run out at?
Right.
Because yep. that's the, like, you face Baltimore without their best player. Now you're going to face, I mean, you face Baltimore without their best player. You face the Bills. Don't know what happened to them, but that was not the Bills team we've seen, you know, for the most part when they're
right, right.
on all cylinders. Now yep. you get a Kansas City with a hobbled Patrick Mahomes. Depending upon what happens in this slobber knocker, Philly and San Francisco, take the under, by the way. Actually, you know what? It's funny. Sidebar. Those are exactly the type of games where you think this is going to be an under game, and all of a sudden it's a 50-something point game. Like,
yeah, so I was going to say.
Don't just yeah. go and take the under. Like, really wait for it and see what happens. But like, where does the novelty, or not the novelty, but where does the magic run out? As long as Philadelphia and San Francisco is able to, if they're able to go into the Super Bowl healthy, without anybody like really compromised, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, but the title of this show, Lucky Seven, or the episode number is Lucky Seven, so. To me, you know, just like we talk about in all sports, but say the NBA, you know, health, you know, is one of those big, you know, teams got to be healthy. You know, there's a certain degree of luck or unluckiness that That's goes true. Into, yeah, you know, so basketball for certain, because one star goes down, you know, that's enough to cripple a season. Football, you know. You might be able to get by a guy or so, but there's a certain degree of luck. So in all the examples you give, you know, it could play out just the way you're talking about, and then it kind of keeps up, and at the end you go, wow, they did this, and this happened. That's the and you go, yeah, because that's how you win championships. Things fall your way.
Absolutely, I think all of that it's fair, right?
Right.
It's right. super fair. But it's going to be so good. Like, Philly Cincinnati is good. Like, if Kansas City is healthy, like a Philly Kansas City is good. It's not that San Francisco's not as good, because I part of me would love to see D'Amico Ryans, you know, get a you know, a championship with his defense and how dominant they've been all season. But boy, just that Jalen Hurts show out there in the Super Bowl, yeah. shutting up all of these idiots that said he wasn't an NFL caliber quarterback. I mean, there is nothing. The amount of backpedaling that and excuses and goalpost moving that they're doing with Jalen Hurts right now, you know, it's phenomenal. And and it's perfect, because because he's not a first round pick, they can't control him with a fifth year option.
Right.
So next year, the only thing they can do is franchise tag him which is an astronomical number for quarterbacks. Like, but you're probably going to have to pay him something like that anyway. And so it's a win-win. It's a win-win for him. The same way, yep. The same way that I look at the Lamar Jackson contract situation, and I go, it's a win-win for Lamar. Like, people keep saying, oh, he needs an agent. Look, worst case scenario, they franchise tag him for 40-something million dollars a year. I think he'll be all right. You know, like, I think he'll be okay, because even if they decide they don't want to rot with him, somebody's going to pay him. Yep. Somebody's going to pay him. And I hope
it's, you know, it pains me to admit how much I miss the New England Patriots in the playoffs, and if I can't have them, then the Bucks. But speaking of how much I miss both of those things in the playoffs, and I have to work to pay as much attention, which I actually don't. Will Brady be back?
I think if Brady plays, he's back in Tampa Bay.
Oh, okay.
I don't see any scenario where Tom Brady plays anywhere else.
You don't see the San Francisco scenario at all?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, you've got to then – I mean, outside of the fact that he's from there, but he hasn't really been there in how long, you know, like, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't, right? We don't know what San Francisco is going to be next year.
Right.
Tampa Bay – we know exactly what the issues were with the Buccaneers. And contrary to a lot of people's beliefs, it wasn't just the offensive coordinator. That's a scapegoat. Like,
well, I was thinking it was the offensive line.
That's the problem. Like,
right.
The year before, you had an offensive lineman retire. You never really replaced them. This year, your center gets hurt for most of the year. You lose your guard to free agency. Your left tackle gets injured for most of the year. The backup left tackle gets injured. You're out there rolling around with you know, lollipops and bubble gum out there for a guy who's 48 million years old and who looked like he did not want to take these hits. Like, yo, I'm not really here to take all these hits. And he was also dealing with a life-altering divorce in public, which I don't think people give enough credit to. We talk all this mental health and all that stuff, and people only care when they care, or they only care when it's women. Like, when we start talking about men and their mental health, especially football players, oh dude, you're Tom Brady, you shouldn't have an issue. You're Tom Brady, you can get any woman you want. So even if Giselle is gone, that man may not have wanted to have his life change. And the idea that doesn't do something to someone, he just did not look right. He did not look right all season. He looked off the entire season. So I give him a pass in the fact that I believe he was dealing with something that he's never had to deal with. When has Tom Brady ever lost? Like, even on Super Bowls, when they didn't win, they were in the Super Bowl. That's not a loss. Yep. Like, when did Tom Brady ever lose in college? They tried to replace him. Couldn't work. He was too good. Kept winning. The man came into the league, got a movie star pregnant, and essentially swept it under the rug. Never had to see any of the legitimate backlash from the fact that he baby mama'd a movie star, you know, and kept it moving. Rolled into Giselle, no issue. Won all the championships, had everything go his way. Who could say anything bad about Tom Brady? Not nobody ever. Then this happens and people go, why can't Tom Brady just be content? He can't sacrifice for his wife, who sacrificed her entire career for him at one point in time. She makes just as much money as him. He's selfish. He's this. So now he has to deal with the scrutiny that he's never had to deal with before. He's been the savior for 20 years. That's going to hit different. And
yeah, if you're
not there, right?
It's a good argument. I mean, and it's as you laid it out there. Again, different set of circumstances, but I think of the challenge that he faced similar to the first challenge that Tiger Woods faced, you know, with the breakup of his marriage and family, and how
in public,
right? Correct, that part of it, because forget the facts. We don't have to get into the facts of it, but just the idea that now this is going to be a public thing that he, as great, right? Two of the greatest winners the world's ever known, you know, are human. Oh, by the way, you know, so interesting.
But you know, and unlike, like, everybody's not built for it. Everybody's not built for that. With Tiger Woods, he was like, okay, swoop. But you know what I'm saying? Just I'll lock back in. But his warts, his, you started to see those cracks in the armor.
100%.
You know, and yeah, he was still able to, you know, regain and do some things, but like Tom Brady, it's different. It's
years later too, though.
Yeah.
No, Tiger was years later. It's very similar. Yeah. I always hey, with Tiger, I always said he would have been better off if he and not from a marketing standpoint, but if he had just come out and said, you know, hey, listen, by the way, I don't know, you guys probably don't want to hear this, but I am just a cheat and this and this. I'm a professional athlete who happens to be very good and, you know, blah, blah, this is who I am, because I thought the events humanized in his effort to get through them, and I'm not judging. I'm just saying it always struck me that if he had just said, hey, look, it, this is what I am. I'm a guy that goes out, plays golf, wins, and then goes, does everything else, essentially whatever I damn well please, and you know, take, you know, love it or leave it.
Like living his real truth. Like living his real truth.
Yeah.
I understand that. He probably lost some years from that. But the part that I don't think people give enough credence to is he was doing all that stuff. That doesn't mean he wanted his marriage to end. Right?
Yep.
That doesn't mean he didn't want what he had. He probably still thought, yo, I could have that. And I don't know what the impetus for Tom Brady's breakup is.
Right.
I find it really hard to believe that his wife of this long decided, oh, you're going back for another season? That's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. If
in my opinion, retirement, no retirement, you were going to see a Tom Brady to Giselle like divorce sooner or later.
Right? Yeah, and I believe that. And I just think celebrity relationships are just a different animal than, you know, they play by a different set of rules, essentially.
Absolutely. So. And I just think having to deal with something where he probably in his mind went, yo, I don't want this to end. So I'm hurt by it. Even if I was part of the reason for it to end, that doesn't mean I want it to end.
Right.
And having to deal with this new normal that he hasn't had to deal with in forever, you know, and now what, well, now what am I going to have to like schedule to see my kids? Am I going to, you know, it's just a whole lot of stuff that he didn't have to deal with before that he now has to deal with, and he has to learn how to navigate. So if he comes back for another season, right, if he's going to come back for another season and the Buccaneers in the offseason, before he makes that decision, puts pieces in place to be able to, like, fill those holes that they know are there, I think the best opportunity for him to be successful, especially in a weak NFC South, is to come back to the Bucs. You want to go through that NFC West meet, right? Like, it's some, like Seattle's not going anywhere. You know, they're going to be around.
Like
the Rams are going to do something. You know, they've got a lot of money invested in guys.
Like Motel 6, I hope Bob Kraft keeps the light on for him so he can go out and play the Patriots.
Hey, you know who Bob Kraft should keep the light on for? Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Imagine Bill Belichick getting a hold of the one weapon that has always been kryptonite to Bill Belichick. Right. Like, I think that would be something phenomenal. I think he would spend the entire summer making and the crazy part is that the offense that they ran with Tom Brady is the offense that Lamar Jackson ran in college. The only difference was that he would run sometimes, and it was in the pistol. But it was the exact same offense, the same type of route combinations, concepts. That's been his biggest issue with Baltimore. People think it's the money. It's not the money. He's tired of being used like a running back in an offense that has him as the leading rusher in his time as a Raven. He's been the leading rusher on the team over his time. Like, yo, what are y'all doing? Like, let me throw the ball and spread out instead of doing this 2 and 3 tight ends and fullbacks and motion and go, and now I'm going to run QB power. Even though that's not how he got hurt, it doesn't help the body to take those hits. He's running the ball 100-plus times a year. That's not – especially the way he's running, it's not a recipe for success. It'll be interesting. It's a great off season coming, but before we get to the off season, we have hopefully two phenomenal NFL, NFC and AFC championship games next week. It's amazing how quickly we get to an hour when we haven't talked in a while with, you know, that's
how it goes. Yeah, well, we're not going to, apologies to some loyal listeners that got to me and said, hey, listen, let's go, time to pod up. So,
hey, no, we're no, back. We're yeah, on we're top back. Of it. We're back. Yeah. We're on top of it. For Coach Witt, I am Coach Gene Clemens. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the podcast. You can find us in several places. Did you know that you can find us on Spotify? Yes. But you can also find us on Amazon Music. You can find the podcast on Amazon Music, Audible.com. Are you into audiobooks? You can find us on Audible. Everywhere that you can look for a podcast, you can almost find Zebra Stripes podcast. It's a fantastic thing, and we love to be able to bring you this. So until next time, again, Coach Witt, Coach Clemens. You all be blessed.